RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. And so, Josh, you know what? I was thinking this week, maybe we should, like, you know, share our feelings and, you know, sort of just, you know, talk a little bit about what troubles us, you know, because I don't want to grow up to be like Dig and Oliver and be cold and uncaring.
No, yeah, I agree. Well, before we do that, I have something I have to ask you. It's really important.
Oh, okay.
Okay, what color are your shoes?
They're white because I'm not wearing shoes at the moment.
Okay, all right,
just trying
thank
to establish
you.
A baseline.
Yeah, yeah, I just had to get that ready. Now I can believe what you say. All right.
I did see a nice meme that somebody put online. It was the still images of Oliver's confession back in season one when he was taken in for the polygraph.
Yeah.
And Detective Lance asks him what color are his shoes, and he like looks over at Laurel. Laurel looks at her dad. Oliver looks back and says, green. And then it just then it ends. So that was cool. Well, anyway, we are here to cover the newest episode of Arrow, and we have a special guest on the show. But first, let's talk about what episode we are covering this week.
Well, we are well in season two now, all the way up to episode 11. Kind of hard to believe it's already there, but Blind Spot is what this is called. And that's, you know, I it's not intended to be an insult to Slade Wilson at all, so please don't take it that way.
I thought it was about a blind seeing eye dog.
that's Slade Wilson's dog. That's
oh, his dog would be so messed up.
I think I'm actually truly in trouble now. So okay. Yeah. So anyway, Blind Spot aired on January 22nd, 2014. It was written by Wendy Miracle and Beth Schwartz. So two women writers on this one. Kind of fits. It was a very Laurel centric episode.
It was a Laurel centric episode, but still with a lot of, you know, I mean, actually there was a bunch of other stuff I thought was good, but it did feature more stuff with the ladies between Laurel and even with Sin.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Glenn Winter directed this one, so let me tell you a little bit about it, and then we'll kind of get into some of the juicy bits about it. So, well, he's been looking for him for a long time, but, you know, despite shouts of Ollie Ollie Oxenfree, the Arrow cannot find the elusive man in the skull mask. But, you know, as luck would have it, Laurel may be able to offer a little assistance. She has her father contact our hero on the Arrow phone to explain how Sebastian's blood relative has revealed to her that his devilish personality is more than what it seems. So, but, you know, trying to turn up information on the alderman turns out to be pretty bad for Laurel's reputation when he arranges to have her arrested for possession of drugs, which she truly has been doing. But so now nobody will believe her. She's losing her job. Oliver no longer blindly trusts her. And her father's arm is killing him. So Laurel is, you know, she's basically having a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. But that's nothing compared to what Blood's men must be feeling after their little meeting with the newly attired Slade Wilson. But maybe Roy's newfound strength can help Oliver understand all this, unless he can't control his aggression, in which case he may need to be mentored by a hoodie of a different color.
Ooh. Is it red? Oh, I mean, it's well, it'll be a red hoodie, but it's a green hoodie. I got it.
Yes. Roy has the red hoodie, and he has to be trained by the green hoodie.
Yes.
So
very cool. Very Christmassy.
Team hoodie.
Team hoodie. Hey, I was also going to mention, I think I texted you when the episode aired. You got your telenovela at the beginning, as we talked about right before winter break.
I did. I mean, you had.
So if you guys recall, Josh was when Moira and Merlin were talking in Moira's living room. Josh thought it sounded very much like a telenovela and even translated into Spanish for all the listeners out there.
It was bueno.
Yeah, it was bueno. But this episode, wow, you got real Spanish and everything.
It had those kind of close-up, you know, telenovela shots. They didn't have the organ playing in the background, though.
Right. Sebastian is the devil.
that first scene was very, very chilling. It would have made a very dramatic telenovela.
Because they kept it in those close-ups, too. I mean, I think that's the end of last week's episode and the beginning of this episode both were very nerve-wracking. It's like, I wasn't sure what's going to happen, you know, the lighting in those sanitariums. It's, you know, it's not all bright and cheery. I mean, they like to keep those people really depressed and down.
Yeah, I'm wondering, is it just good for business? Is that why they do that?
I don't know.
Maybe if they cheer the place up a little bit, they wouldn't have as many patients, but...
It's the Tim Burton Sanatorium for the demented and insane, or something like that. So, anyway,
some of the hallways are tilted, and you know,
yeah, yeah, and it's forced perspective with weird stripes, and the floor undulates and things like that. So, anyway, hey, we've got a one piece of news here, and then we got a special surprise for everybody. So let me get this. Let me get through this first here. So, you may have heard that Stephen Amell was involved in some rumors about an upcoming. Rumored Justice League movie. A lot of people are talking about a potential Justice League movie now that there is talk of Man of Steel 2, also known as Superman versus Batman. Wonder Woman has been cast in that film, supposedly with a cameo, and then they moved the entire movie back a year because they really want to work on the script. But people are saying, well, maybe it's because they're trying to get, you know, a whole universe like Marvel's trying to put together and also do a Justice League movie, because if you've got Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman, that's the Trinity right there. You know, you could then have Cyborg, you could have Green Arrow, and so people would, I guess it was one of the websites, Fandango was saying that Stephen Amell was linked to, you know, this potential movie, and he took to Facebook, I guess it was, and, you know, he was kind of talking about how cool it would have been, but he had to respond and say, you know, that he tries to be open and honest and thoughtful, but he finds it incredibly discouraging to see headlines like the one he's been seeing this morning and confirm that or pointed out that he has had no studio-level discussions about any feature films at Warner Brothers. You know, he just... It would be cool if he was asked, I think, but, you know, he goes on to say that they're making a kick-ass show and will continue to make a kick-ass show, which I think both you and I agree on.
Oh, yes.
And he goes, I love our fans, and if every once in a while some person, quote-unquote person, that's not the word he uses, wants to pull a headline out of thin air to generate page views, and that's the price we pay. So, you know, I saw some comments following this where people were like, I know that rumor is totally false because he would outclass everybody else in that movie.
You know, it's true. The one thing I like about Stephen Amell is he's really kind of a down-to-earth, open guy. I mean, he's so excited about what he's doing, and he's kind of like the Jennifer Lawrence of the comic book genre, you know? I mean,
that is so funny. Yeah, exactly. I totally agree.
But I think it's kind of sad that one of the negative characteristics of the ease of presenting media, you know, through the internet and things that we have now, is that anybody can say anything right away. And I tell you what, all you got to be is attached to some sort of DC movie or TV show, and they link you to the Justice League movie that doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
So,
but I'm pretty sure that I was rumored at one point to be.
Well, you know,
Justice League movie.
You've read DC Comics, so it's possible.
I have. I mean, I'm really hoping I'm up for the role of Snapper Carr. I got it down. I can totally do that. So if you guys are looking, I'm available.
So I thought you were like, you know, bomber dude or whatever.
Oh, a blower upper guy.
Blower upper guy, yeah. That wasn't you.
Well, I had to change, you know, as you recommended last week, I had to change my screen name after I saw what happened to Shrapnel. So.
Oh, that's okay. All right. You're one of those one of those criminals that changes to trick all the superheroes. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, you know what? If there ever is a Justice League movie and they need a Green Arrow, Stephen Amell is the guy. But until then, hey, let him make his own cool show.
Yep, exactly. I would much rather see him on the small screen here for now. But you know, again, having him in as a cameo for something I think would be awesome. So.
It's still better than being in 50 Shades of Grey, though. So it's all good.
Right. All right. So now we would like to present a very special moment here, and we have an interview for everybody. So without further ado, I'm just gonna let myself take it away here. Well, we here at Green Justice are very pleased to welcome one of the executive producers of Arrow to our show, Mr. Mark Guggenheim. Glad you could make it here today, Mark.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Just want to give a quick bio for our listeners. So besides Arrow, and just correct me if I'm wrong on any of this stuff, you've also produced Flash Forward and also one of my personal favorite shows, Eli Stone, as well as being a co-writer on the Green Lantern film. And then you've written a number of comics that include The Amazing Spider-Man, Justice Society of America, Batman Confidential, and Wolverine. So pretty good chops there in terms of comic book-related stuff.
Thank you.
So we've just seen the episode Blind Spot, which advanced the storylines a lot, and the character arcs on Arrow seem to move so much faster than other genre shows. And so we were wondering if you could tell us how you decide how far to go with a character on any given episode.
That's a good question. I guess, you know, for us, it kind of is just something we sort of feel. Usually we start off with where the character is, you know, emotionally and where we want them to end up. And very rarely do we say, oh, well, that's taking them too far in this episode. Usually we want them to have gone through some sort of significant change. And as a result, when you sort of pile those changes up over the course of a 23-episode season, things are moving very sort of fast and furious. And one thing that we've discovered is that that's something that's good for the show, that people, you know, they want their storytelling to be fast-paced.
Well, it's such a counterpoint to a lot of the other stuff we see, like I said, and it really makes other shows seem slow by comparison now, I gotta say.
Cool. I'm actually glad to hear that.
It's something that I know that both Josh and I have been energized with and really appreciate about the show.
Yeah, I mean, by the end of the episode, you're ready for the big stuff and you're anticipating what's next, and that gets you excited for the next week. It helps a lot, so.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. It's very good to hear. The show was sort of very much designed that way from jump, and it's something we just try to keep on doing, and if we can get faster, we get faster.
You know, one of the things that we love looking for in every episode and in both seasons so far is finding all the comic book references, the Easter eggs, you know. So I just picture you guys sitting around a table like, you consider like a challenge to see if you can put in some that are hard for people to identify, or you know, what's the background behind how you guys decide what to put in there?
You know, it's a great question. There's such a different variety of them. I mean, sometimes it's like, I'll give you an example. Yesterday we're breaking a story and we needed a SWAT team leader, like sort of a, you know, a tough cop, and we had a name, and you know, Andrew Kreisberg, who I co-run the show with, he's like, well, isn't there a DC comic character we can name him after? And sure enough, there was. You know, we looked at, you know, members of the Metropolis Police Department, and, you know, we're like, oh, that's perfect. So sometimes it's that. Sometimes it's something in the environment. For example, I don't want to spoil it, but there's my favorite Easter egg, or, you know, probably one of my favorites that we've ever done, appears in episode 14. It's actually an Easter egg that we had done for episode 23 last year, our season finale, but the camera didn't catch it. So it never made it into the final cut. Mm-hmm. So this whole season I've been looking for opportunities to put it back in because, like I said, it's one of my favorites, and I think when people see it, they'll really, really enjoy this particular Easter egg. So you know, it really depends. I mean, sometimes it's dropping a name, sometimes it's putting something on a you know, on a screen. Sometimes it's, you know, just a character walking past. We have some. I mean, if you like, if you watch the show for the Easter eggs, we've got some really, really terrific ones coming up. I'll even say there's an Eli Stone Easter egg in episode 12. Actually, this week's episode.
Make a note of that, Jay.
I'll have to look for that one. So I got to say, it's like, come for the Easter egg, stay for the show. It's
I'm happy whether it happens in whatever order.
I mean, it shows that, and Josh and I have talked about this on our podcast previously, but it's, you guys are really having fun, because I mean, with all the stuff you guys are putting into the show, I can tell that it's an enjoyable process, the making of the whole show for you, just based on that. And I think if you're happy doing your job, you're making a better product. Everyone's going to like it, and it's just going to, you know, keep continuing in that process. So,
completely agree. I mean, look, at the end of the day, we all love comic books over here, and you know, we're all fans, and we sort of approach the show from a fan's perspective. And I think, you know, I think that shows. I think it's, you know, the Easter eggs are just one example of how our fandom infiltrates the show.
So obviously Arrow's an adaptation of the Green Arrow from the comics, but it differs from any one particular interpretation of that comic. As the show continues into the future, how do you feel that it may stray from certain characters' paths, such as Roy Harper's origins, which we're seeing are taking, I don't want to say a drastic turn, but it's a different path than what we may have seen or read in the comic books?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Roy's probably one of the best examples of, you know, we had him, we introduced him basically as a pickpocket, you know, with a very different sort of familial background, and obviously a very different trajectory in terms of becoming a superhero. His exposure to the Mirakuru being, you know, another good example of something that never happened or anything analogous ever happened to Roy in the comics. So I think, you know, one of the things we always sort of say is that we use the comic books as a jumping off point, as a point of inspiration, but we always, you know, sort of feel free to go our own way. It's something you really can do with a character like Green Arrow, you know, where his, you know, his origin and the elements of his story have always sort of been a little fungible from a continuity perspective. There have been a wide number of iterations of that character over the years. It's
sure.
Not like, you know, it's not like Superman. If you do Superman and Krypton doesn't blow up, you're not really doing Superman. You know, in the comics, both of Oliver's parents are dead, and you know, we made the choice to, you know, to keep his mother Moira alive. In the comics, he doesn't have any siblings, and, you know, in the show, we gave him Thea. So we've always sort of, you know, felt artistic license to deviate from the comics when we thought it helpful. And even now, we're starting to see the show affect the comic, which is really nice. Like, you know, Diggle has made a comic book appearance. You know, Oliver's father, spoiler alert, has been revealed to be alive. There's just fun, you know, fun elements, you know, of the show that, you know, now are finding their ways into the comic book lore, and we're kind of really enjoying watching that happen.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Diggle, and he started off as a non-comic character, but now he's, you know, he's one of the fans' favorites. So, you know, where's he headed? What can you tell us about Diggle's future?
I can say it's a very sort of spoiler-heavy episode, but Dig has a very big episode in episode 16 coming up. A lot of stuff that we've seeded throughout his season and a half on the show comes up again, and it's a much more Dig. It's probably the most Dig-centric episode that we've done on the show to date. And there's not a whole lot I can say about it because, like I said, there's a lot of spoilers involved, but it's pretty cool. And I think comic book fans in particular are really going to enjoy that one.
Oh, well, nice. If he more takes Diggle to come, though.
Yeah. I was going to say, if he takes his shirt off, I'm sure my wife will be happy.
His shirt will be coming off.
I'll let her know.
So, and sooner than episode 16, even. So,
oh, wow. Cool.
She will be quite happy.
Well, we... each week when we release our shows, we get a number of different conversations happening on different social media, on Twitter, on Facebook. And listener Paul wants to know, he says, what do you think of the fact that they, meaning the creators of Arrow, pretty much erased the no superpowers rule with the first from the first season with one story arc and pretty much one episode? So I guess we're wondering what kind of prompted that change of heart from what we had heard about during season one?
I think, you know, it's just a function of the decision to have the Flash spin off of Arrow. There's no way to Flash without breaking that superpowers rule, and there's no way to connect the the Arrow universe to the Flash without basically bringing superpowers into the Arrow universe. So, you know, I mean, I guess I would say rules are made to be broken, and, you know, if we've got a good story to tell, and I think the Flash is an excellent story to tell, you know, we're not going to be beholden to whatever sort of original limitations we placed on ourselves. You know, we're always going to do hopefully we've done the superpowers on Arrow in a way that honors the tone of the show. I believe that we have. I feel like the Mirakuru is very grounded. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, our treatment of Barry Allen and the Flash, you know, is very, very grounded. So I still feel like we're adhering to, as lawyers would say, the spirit of the rule. With any luck, the show will have a nice long life, and we may find ourselves going back on several of our self-imposed rules.
That's fine. I don't think the fans mind
telling a good story.
I think
some people mind, and some people, you know, get what we're doing, and you know, to the people who mind, I hope that they're still sticking with the show. You know, because there's plenty. You know, the show is more than just. I always feel like the show is all about its tone, and it's not about whether there are superpowers or not superpowers. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I mean, if you look at, you know, it's funny in many ways. Like, the Joker would actually be a broader, tonally a broader villain than when we've typically done on Arrow. The Dark Knight movie showed that the Joker can be done in a really cool and grounded way. It's all about tone and less about rules, as far as I'm concerned.
If you had told me that, you know, the Deathstroke that we saw in season one, that was what we were getting, it's like, okay, that's fine, but, you know, Josh and I talk about this often. You keep surprising us with what you're willing to put into the show, and again, the speed of which you're willing to put it in. So it's very exciting as a viewer to sit here and think you know what's coming, and then to actually be surprised. Even though I've read the comic books and I know what the story is supposed to be, you guys are tweaking it just enough that it's very pleasurable to watch, very exciting to talk about with my friends. So I think you're doing a great job on that. And I hope you have a long career with this. I want to see the 5 years on the island and all that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate the kind words.
So anything you can tease us with for the last half of the season, maybe? More Solomon Grundy or Cyrus Gold?
I'll say that... Well, the titles for episodes 16 and 17 are going to so excite comic book fans that we're actually going to try to, you know, keep those titles secret for as long as we can. They're really going to blow people's minds. And I think people will be surprised that we're doing both these two titles, two episodes in a row.
Is one called Dark and the other one called Night?
No.
Okay.
That much I can say. But it's some pretty big exciting stuff, and I think if people think we've done a lot of DC Comics stuff in the first half of the season, they just have no idea what's coming for the second half.
Awesome. Well, Mark, in closing, I have a friend who I talk to him about the show each week, and I've been telling him how great it is. It's available on Netflix to see the first season, and he doesn't have time. He kind of refuses to watch the show now, but he's a huge comic book fan, and so I'm wondering, what's the one thing that you could tell him to convince him to give the show a chance, or anybody out there who might be on the fence about watching a show on the CW?
I guess, you know, the thing that most people tell me is that they're always surprised that it's on the CW.
Yeah.
that it doesn't feel like a CW show to them. And I don't, you know, I think that's from like sort of a tonal. It's not like Gossip Girl. You know, and you know, the CW is itself changing since the Gossip Girl days. But it's, you know, this is a show that I think could live on almost any network, and a lot of cable networks. We're really trying to do, you know, like a little movie each week, quite frankly, from a storytelling perspective and from a production value perspective. You know, don't, you know, if the packaging is what's turning you off, you know, try to, I guess, you know, eat the candy bar another way.
Well, that's great. So, Mark, we'd really like to thank you for taking time to join us here on Green Justice and Arrow podcast. And we look forward to talking again at some point soon.
Cool. Well, it was great talking to you guys. Thank you so much. I really appreciate all the kind words.
Thank you.
That was so cool, Josh. I'm still buzzing about having that interview. I thought that was great. That was very nice of Mark to make time for us to come on the show. And, reveals, you know, I mean, we got a lot of great little teases there, that stuff that I haven't even heard about yet. So I'm very excited.
Thank you again to Mark and everyone involved in getting Mark on the show. And we just really appreciate you being so generous with your time and talking to us about things that we're all so passionate about. It was great. Great talking to him.
Agreed. Well, now let's get on to talking about Blind Spot here. All right. So, well, I got the telenovela part out of the way, so that was really the big thing that I wanted to talk about for this episode.
All right. So, good night.
Yeah, that's it. No. As we often do on the show, the titles of the episodes are very strong representations of a theme. Most of the time that takes place on Arrow. And I think Blind Spot here is no exception. I think you can look at each of the storylines that we were going through in this episode and see a specific blind spot for the character. Josh, you want to take a couple of these here? What are some of the blind spots that you were making sense of seeing in the episode here this week?
Well, I was kind of trying to see, you know, how each one has. And I guess blind spots can be, you know, translated into many different things, I guess. But, you know, one thing I saw as far as Oliver, since he was kind of there, even though he was maybe not the main character in this particular episode, but I think his trust in Laurel was kind of like a blind spot to him. And he mentioned that at the end of the episode where he said that he was just kind of going on what she says because it was Laurel. And to me, that was the first thing that I kind of thought of as a blind spot, you know, when you're kind of not open to other ideas and you're not seeing around, you're sort of got these blinders on and only can see ahead of you.
I would say he wasn't, and he wasn't, because Lance, Detective Officer Lance, called him and said, you know, somebody's talked to you, and he goes and sees Laurel, and Laurel says, hey, you know, I've got, well, she sees the Arrow, but she says, you know, I've got some information, I think Sebastian Blood's a bad doobie. And, you know, he's like, really? I don't think so. And she's like, no, but you got to trust me. And what's his first inclination is he just trusts her, right? Like you're saying, that might be his blind spot, which comes back to bite him in the butt. So he then all of a sudden realizes, oh, maybe she is my blind spot. But the funny thing about it is she and him are totally correct, right? They were always on the right track, which is interesting because now, because they've been burned on this, you know, it's kind of like double jeopardy in like a law case or something, right? They've been burned on this. They can't see what's directly in front of their face because, well, we already went down that road, and that's not what's happening. So, you know, Blood and, by extension, Deathstroke has bought, you know, the whole organization, you know, like 7 or 8 more episodes worth of time before they discover what's going on.
Yeah, one thing that, I mean, I guess this was realistic, but one thing that I kind of didn't feel quite right about toward the end, at least with Oliver, was that he was so quick to not believe her anymore. He was so so quick to go, oh, I guess that wasn't the guy we were thinking. Oh, well, at least we got him. Because, I mean, how hard would it be to slap a mask on somebody and send him in as a decoy? He's done it. He had Diggle do it.
Right. Well, I mean, between her dad and Oliver not believing anything that Laurel had to say, I too had some there was a few short-sighted things that I saw in this episode, and God be it for me to like be criticizing the show unjustly.
Oh no.
But you know, cuz I haven't said anything bad this season, so this will probably be my first hopefully and only dig at the show. But she, you know, was looked at, I believe, like you said, really unfairly by everybody because of that. It's like, obviously, here's a charismatic guy who has people following him. You know, even if you don't know that he is the guy in the mask and involved with this whole underground thing, but Oliver does kind of know that the guy in the mask is, you know, making these super soldiers. Also, you've got Alderman Blood, who has all sorts of people following him there. Yeah, how hard is it for him to have a follower that they would, you know, like you said, just slap a mask on and send him in as a decoy?
And the other things that they had kind of investigated throughout the episode, I mean, his they found out that was his mother. They found out that she just died. They went in and stole those files, and the files were disappeared. You know, they were missing. So there were all these little things that would have kept me at least suspicious. But, you know, the other thing I was thinking of as far as the skull mask goes, if he truly wants to stay in hiding for a little while longer, he probably can't use that skull mask anymore, or at least, you know, not let Arrow know, that it's still out there. Otherwise that ruse is totally blown. But, and you know what? I don't feel like we're saying anything bad about this episode, just kind of, constructive criticism on certain things that we were just kind of like, that's not where I would have expected it to go, you know? So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know. It's just, I feel like I haven't even had any kind of criticisms like that. I mean, it seems, and maybe I'm getting so caught up in some of the hype and action of some of the previous episodes that I'm ignoring some, you know, little, I don't go for the little nitpicky things, I guess, you know, like continuity errors and things like that.
Right, right.
But this, it like you said, it wasn't just one element. It was like, okay, Laurel, you're a pill popper. I'm not going to believe you. No one was out trying to get you. You know, you're crazy or you're drugged out or whatever. But like you said, she just found out that Sebastian murdered his father. Then the mother dies mysteriously. Then Laurel's attacked and her apartment is flipped.
Not to mention that the cop that arrested her was the one in the mask.
Yeah, the one that ends up being the dupe. And I'm sure that we're going to find out in an episode or two that Officer Lance is going to discover Quentin. That it was actually Daly who was the mole, because he still hasn't figured out who the mole in his department was. If I'm not mistaken, right? He hasn't uncovered that, because he was searching for that last week and getting some help from Laurel or whoever to figure that out, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was trying to, but I that seems kind of maybe obvious now, or maybe he realizes it, or yeah, I mean,
well, maybe, yeah, we just haven't seen him piece that together. I mean, even if they had like a couple lines of him saying, "Oh my gosh, I couldn't believe it was, you know, Daly. He seemed like such a good cop," or something like that.
Yeah, well, I guess it's like I said, it is probably realistic. I mean, if you know somebody that, I don't know what scenario, but you know, if you were in a situation where you did find out Laurel actually was, you know, taking these drugs and maybe being an alcoholic, and she said something that, you believe, but then you found out all these problems she's having, you probably would second guess what they were saying. So, I mean, it's not that far out of the realm of possibility. It just, for as far as Oliver is concerned, I just thought he should have been a little bit more savvy.
Yeah. Agreed. So, well, speaking of Laurel's drug use and everything like that, I'm thinking that kind of her blind spot, well, she's got multiple blind spots, and she is blinding herself, I believe, with the drugs. I mean, I think that is, she's on the right track, but she's painting herself into a corner because, like we just said, she's using so much that even though she's uncovered the truth, who's going to believe her because all this other, you know, stuff's come out about it. But, you know, she has been, you know, taken by Sebastian and, you know, kind of he's used her in a way and set her up for a fall. You know, it was something, it seemed like it was Slade's idea to have Sebastian get close to Laurel for, you know, whatever extended purposes, but just in a way to get back at the vigilante / Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
And she is just, she's unable, she has been unable to see, you know, all the machinations going on behind her back, right in front of her face, you know?
Yeah. So. I think she almost, thought that, oh, he's just this guy, he's doing some bad stuff, but, you know, I can sneak around and I can help take him down. And I don't think she realized how powerful.
I mean, you're thinking, okay, it's a politician. I mean, what's he done? He's bribed some cops. He's, you know, cheated. He's got hookers or what, you know, whatever bad thing you might think that, alderman might have done. Well, you know, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. Well, she did find out that he killed his father, or at least that's what she believed, which, I mean, is true. Most of the stuff, right, she believed was true, but then by the end, nobody believed her.
Exactly.
So, you're right. She was just kind of blind all over. As much as I'm not caring for where the character is going right now, you know, it could end up in a good place. It's just kind of hard to watch and not what I would have thought, and maybe it wouldn't. It's not my favorite idea, but I do kind of have to say that the way they're handling the drug usage is pretty well done. I mean, mm-hmm. it's pretty real and gritty, and I think that's good that they're really kind of showing how ugly it can be, and they certainly haven't made her look as glamorous, I guess.
Well, my wife was pointing out this week, she goes, she's looking pretty thin. And I'm like,
yeah,
well, she's using all these drugs. And she's like, no, I mean, the actress is looking kind of thin. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it could be the makeup, the lighting, who knows.
Even just apart from her weight, yeah, she didn't look as well put together, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if she'd auditioned for a CW show looking like that, she probably wouldn't have got the part.
Since you mentioned Sebastian's father, I'll just throw this out there right now. When we see, there is one shot where, I think it was where Slade throws the file folder down, or the files on Sebastian's dad down on the table. We see that Sebastian's dad's last name is Sangre, which is Spanish for blood, as in sangria, which I thought was brilliant. You know, that's really great. And of course, you know, the fact that, leave it to Felicity to just lay it out on the table that, well, his last name's Blood. That's got to be pretty bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's no one ever mentions these things in the show, you know, in comic books or whatever. But in the show, it's like she just tells the truth. It's great.
Well, and it's interesting to see the interaction between like Felicity and Diggle and Oliver. I mean, Diggle's kind of been on the wrong side, like the incorrect side. Lately, yeah. You know, I mean, like, hey, you know, aren't you going to give your friend the benefit of the doubt? Come on, he's your friend. He's okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Oh, Dig.
Like, wait, no, stop. Diggle, he's right. He's on the right track.
Yeah. It's a trap. you know what, and I have loved basically, there have been two scenes with Diggle in the last two episodes. The one last week where he was getting, where Felicity was getting yelled at, and he kind of said, hey, you know, at the risk of getting my head, you know, taken off too. And then this week with the, you know, same, he just had one like little quip and stuff like this. I really want to see more Diggle, which I'm glad we're going to be getting some more of him coming up, according to Mark.
Me too.
That's really cool.
He needs to see more action this season. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. I mean, cause I think David Ramsey's a great actor. I just like to see him, perform a little bit more on the show. I mean, but you know, again, where they're using him, they're using him sparingly, I think, and you know, trying to get a lot of other storylines moving along, like the Roy storyline. I think that's really important right now. But I'd love to see a Felicity episode. I'd love to see a Diggle episode. So it sounds like we're gonna be getting some more of those. So let's see, Sebastian Blood, blind spots for him. Any thoughts about that?
Well, the one thing I thought I saw for him as far as a blind spot is I don't think he realizes who he's dealing with in Slade. And that is, I think, painfully obvious at the end when he goes in there. He's like, oh, good, everything's taken care of. No.
I got it.
So, and you know, I mean, they present him. I mean, Blood is freaky scary. I mean, like, he'll, you know, I mean, he killed
in his element, he's scary.
Yes.
In the political arena and in his basement laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
But when he gets to Slade's penthouse or whatever that is.
Right. Well, and what I think that really illustrates is how truly powerful and in control Slade is. Because Blood is. I mean, he's big time. I mean, he's got something huge going. But even that is not even close to what Slade is capable of. And I think that's really good because, I mean, Oliver's been having trouble with Blood all season long, and so that sets up a major, major confrontation by the end. I'm thinking by the end of this season with Slade.
Well, I mean, you look at the confrontation that Oliver had with Cyrus Gold when he was tricked out on the Mirakuru. Gold has no real training and didn't really know how to handle himself necessarily under the effects of the drug. Slade has been, you know, dealing with this for 5 years and was a trained warrior and probably could have kicked Oliver's butt, you know, way before getting onto the drug. So, and who knows, maybe he's had boosters along the way or something like that as well. So,
Mirakuru
really.
Mirakuru 2? What, like Red Bull and Mirakuru? What's.
Oh my God, that would just put you in your butt.
Mirakuru gives you wings! What was I going to say about Slate? Oh, is that it's a very, and we haven't really seen, I think, what he's even capable of, but it's a good representation of Deathstroke because that's how he's in the comics. I mean, Deathstroke is, he can take down, you know, big time powerful superheroes that have, you know, super strength and things like that. Mm-hmm. So this is, I think that's a good representation of him.
He's strong, and he's also a tactical genius in the comics, at least, and a master of hand-to-hand combat. Again, with the addition of his super strength or enhanced strength, really makes him quite a formidable weapon, you know, to throw at somebody.
Right.
I think that's definitely a blind spot for Blood, but I'm also thinking that potentially Laurel is a blind spot for him too, because I think he feels like maybe he's gotten her under his thumb. She was digging around, but now he's, you know, quashed her, because basically he says he comes in and he says, I've dealt with it, right? He thinks he's dealt with it. But I think he's underestimating Laurel. And, you know, we've seen that Laurel has both a physical ability, you know, and inner strength and stuff like that. And I think what they're doing with the character potentially is they're really, you know, they're just taking her down as far as she can go. I mean, she doesn't have a job now. Like, what's she going to do with her life? You know, but become a superhero. I don't know. Yeah. No, I don't think that's going to happen right away. But, you know, I think she's going to bounce back and she's going to surprise. You know, maybe she's going to run for mayor. That's stupid. I'm sorry. I'm just kind of vamping off the top of my head.
No, that's you're right. I think for the Laurel character, they need to push her down far so she can really drag herself back up in a big way, because I mean in my mind that would be the ultimate goal. If she's going to be Canary eventually, she needs to hit the bottom. I mean, that's what Oliver did. That's what Sarah has done. Mm-hmm. They were at the bottom, and the strength that they needed to claw their way back up made them what they are now.
Right. Yeah. So that's, you know, I think I'm wondering if Laurel's going to be key in whatever ends up taking at least Sebastian down at the end of the season, because I think there's definitely a stake in the whole that whole storyline for her now.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's Oliver's duty to take it down, but Laurel has now been, she's been elevated to having a stake in that whole matter as well.
And I would be okay with that if Laurel was the one that ended up taking him out. I'd be okay with that.
Well, the fact that, for about 3 seconds when she shot, quote-unquote, blood, I was freaking out. I'm like, whoa, that was really wait a second. That's not blood. But all of a sudden she just pulls this gun out, and she, she had no compunction about pulling that trigger. I mean, it was just like, she saw the opportunity and she took it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because she acted, at that point, I think she acted out of a really dark place that, I mean, no one really got into that, but I mean, she shot a man to death, right? I'm also wondering what kind of repercussions that may have, because I would think that may also take her, deeper, darker, deeper, darker and further down than she already is, before she rebounds, because, that's not just something to take lightly. The fact that you just murdered somebody, even though, it was self-defense and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. That stuff affects you in real life. I mean, so I hope it would on the show. It happens so frequently that sometimes, I think we get kind of desensitized to seeing it on TV, but it would make a big difference.
Right. Then we've got Brother Roy.
Brother Roy.
I like that. You were thinking that his blind spot is kind of the Mirakuru, taking over his mind. Personally, and I don't disagree with that, because I feel that, in the scene that we saw where he was beating the crap out of that...
the slasher.
The slasher dude.
Yeah.
Wow. Again, he went to a real deep, dark place, and he lost himself just the same way that we saw Slade do on the island, and he turned on Sin, and it's like, ooh, wow, I was afraid he was going to take her head off or something like that. But I think Roy's blind spot is the same blind spot he has had for the entire series, the entire characterization of him. He's a loner, and his hubris is his blind spot. He feels that he doesn't need anybody else. He can handle everything on his own, even though, technically he comes to Sin to help her... have her help him in this, but just only, to kind of be bait, so that he can, take care of business.
Which never works, by the way.
Oh, never. Never, ever.
Just as a tactic, everyone, don't use your friends as bait, okay? Yeah, so,
even when they say, no, it's okay, you can use me as bait. Poor Felicity.
Yeah, really. I like your answer... your explanation of blind spot way better than mine. So I'm going to go with that. I like that.
Okay. Well, I didn't know. I mean, do you want to expand on what you were thinking about with the Mirakuru?
No, not really.
Okay.
It was just,
sorry.
He was kind of, and that kind of goes along with, what you were saying, but he was not going to anybody for help because he, I don't know if he thought he could control it. I think he was almost just like, I don't think I want to share this with anybody. And it just kind of had more to do with the Mirakuru, and I think it was causing him to be just lose control. I don't know. Like I said, yours was better than mine. I like that.
Fact
that seems more like a blind spot than the Mirakuru itself. The Mirakuru is the catalyst to it, I guess.
Catalyst. That is true. That is true. That's good. That's a good way to put it, too. Now, we've left the hardest one for last, and I really couldn't come up with anything for this. What about Slade? What do you think? Does he have any blind spots?
I think for Slade, yes, he does have a blind spot. I think it's really just a patch, really.
Yeah.
Patch on his eye. I think that's his blind spot.
I thought you were going to say it was a patch he was going through. Just a rough patch.
I would go for the right side if I was going to attack Slade. I would go toward the right side. His right side. Not
his right side, right.
Yeah, don't get that mixed up.
That's good. I think his anger and his what do I want to say? You know, unrequited love,
vengeance. I don't.
Well, yeah, that's true. I guess that would be the vengeance. I mean, he feels wronged by Oliver, and I'm wondering how much of it is real and how much of it is sort of Mirakuru induced. You know, we don't know what else this drug does to somebody in terms of their psyche. You know, because you know, who knows? I mean, it could just be destroying them on the inside. It obviously seems to. It seems like it's heightening the abilities of somebody, but it's also heightening their emotional state as well. Yeah. Because after Slade took it, you know, he just seemed to be get all mopey and, you know, just because he finally realized, oh my gosh, you know, she really did love me, and just, you know, he's totally pissed now. I don't know, you know,
what if a really happy, giggly person took Mirakuru? Do you think you would just laugh all the time and just
like the Joker?
Oh, no, that's scary. I was thinking more like, you know, someone at a party or something, you know,
okay.
Just really drunk at a party, but
interesting.
You don't usually see those kind of villains on superhero shows. So.
No, it would be
the
like
giggler.
Be like someone from Mad Men, you know, becoming a villain on the show or something like that.
I don't know. Well, anyway, those were some blind spots that I saw in people. They fit kind of well with the title and the overall, you know, kind of the theme of the episode.
Yeah, I was going to also add Island Oliver, because I think his blind spot is he for a while there, and he may have realized it in this episode, was that he was still trusting Sarah.
I agree with that. Total blind spot.
And then he comes back at, you know, at the end of this episode, basically, and it's like, you know, I was taught. I've learned some things in the last year as well, and I've learned never to trust anyone.
Except, which, of course, for you, Sarah.
I love you, pretty bird. The other interesting thing is we did get confirmation that Sarah has been on the Amazo with Dr. Ivo for the last year. It's not so. I know I had raised the point, did she go away and work with the League of Assassins for a while or what? So,
and she said that he taught her things.
He taught her. I got such a creepy vibe from that line, and also from him too. He was just being real creepy, like Gordon Jump on Different Strokes, kind of creepy. As the
Gordon Jump creepy as a standard.
Well, I don't know. I'm, you know, it just,
yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, that's
he was that creepy pedophile that was trying to hit on Arnold. You know,
I just picture Sarah coming off Ivo like chewing a big wad of gum. Oliver, I'm just covering up her breath. That is creepy. Now, man, it means even creepier to me now that I'm picturing Gordon Jump.
Well, and how about this? It's like, has anyone compared Different Strokes to Arrow before? I believe I am the first.
You heard it here first, folks. Yes. This is why you have to listen to Green Justice.
We're going places where you won't go. Oh, boy.
Gordon Jump would be a good villain on this show, actually. he is. He's totally creepy. Out of everything from this and all the people's blind spots, and especially Roy, the sort of the overall theme, I think, that you can get from this episode is that you need to ask for help when it's needed. You know, Roy needed to ask for help. He asked from Sin first, but eventually, you know, he needed to get more help, and he's going to get it from Oliver.
He should have talked to somebody. You know, I mean, Thea is close to him, and she wants to know what's going on with him and wants to help him, and yet he will not. I mean, why wouldn't you want to say, hey, look, I got these cool superpowers.
Hey, how you doing? Do you think he's protecting her? Do you think he's embarrassed? Do you think why won't he tell Thea? Or why didn't he want to tell
that? I don't know. That is a good question. It almost feels like I want to say he's protecting her in some way, but
it almost feels like he's embarrassed about it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. He's a weird guy. Well, it maybe goes back to like what I was saying before, just about his hubris. It's like he doesn't want to admit he needs help from somebody, but he doesn't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
So obviously,
yeah.
Well,
the other thing is, you know, Thea has always been the one to say, "Hey, look, you need to stop going out there trying to protect people so much. It's dangerous for you. You're going to get hurt."
Yep.
And now he's got these abilities that almost make him obligated to go out there and do it, at least in his mind, right?
Right.
And so maybe that's another reason is he says, look, I really want to use this for good. I really want to be a hero. I really want to help. And Thea is a big roadblock because she's always there. She doesn't want me to go.
But he could just go up to her and say, honey, I have these powers and abilities that are far beyond those of mortal man.
Yeah, that worked out great. Maybe he could have said that before he was in the hospital with that guy, but afterwards probably not.
Yeah, that was – yeah, I mean, and I appreciate how the writers and the creators of the show bring it back. It's like, oh, you know, how cool would it be? I have superpowers and I can do all this stuff. I can punch through a brick wall. I can take out people that, you know, I can go protect people and beat them up and stuff like this. Well, you get to see the real cost of that here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's some guy he beat up and, you know, he nearly killed him. And, you know, that's, again, it's not just the TV version of what happens when you shoot somebody or you beat somebody up. It's kind of the real life version. It's like, you know, this is a human, you know, you have injured them. There is remorse. I mean, Roy, you know, totally broke down at the end. Again, I think, you know, he's juicing pretty hard there. He's got all sorts of emotions running around him. And I think they're heightened or something by the drug.
Yeah. Well, the scene where he, you know, walked around the corner, that was at the hospital, I think.
Yeah,
and just kind of sat down and broke down crying there. That was a really good scene, really powerful way to show what he was going through. And I'm glad they did that. I'm glad that they're showing that inside he's kind of struggling with this.
Yeah.
Because it shows. It shows that Roy truly is a hero. You know, he's not ready to be the hero yet, but in his heart, he's got what it takes to be a hero, which is always what it should have been from the beginning when they introduced the character of Roy Harper, because we know who Roy Harper is in the comics and what he eventually becomes.
He's not the hero we need, but he's the hero we have right now. So I thought Colton Haynes did a really bang up job in this episode. He had a lot of physicality to deal with. Plus he had a lot of, you know, emotional range to deal with through this. And I mean, it basically was the Roy and Laurel show. I would say that their storylines probably got the balance of the episode.
Yeah.
So yeah. He had to carry a lot for the episode.
You know, as much as maybe this wasn't, you know, close to one of my more enjoyable episodes of the season, I think it's an important one in order to connect things in the storyline with the characters. And you need, you know, we've had some great character development over the course of the season, you know, with the main characters and the main storyline, but you had these little characters on the fringes of it, and they need to eventually kind of merge and connect somehow.
Right.
So
I think it's a transition episode.
Yeah. So I mean, while this wasn't, you know, the ultra huge bang up episode of the season to look forward to, it was a really important link in the whole chain.
Right. Well, I've got one other semi-issue with a sequence that happened in here, and it's the records room sequence. It started out really nice with Felicity blacking out the monitors and then telling Oliver, it's cool, you know, you got 7 minutes, you can just waltz in, get what you need. Oh, wait a second. We got the only guard here who has an IT degree or something like that. You know, get out of the way. And, you know, you see the vigilante, you know, jump behind a stack. And then the security guard calls the cops and he says, you know, we need some guys down here. He didn't, it wasn't like he said, hey, I just saw the vigilante in the records room. It's this records room at City Hall or wherever it is. I mean, it's an older one. They're really going to send like 12 SWAT team members because of a break-in? I didn't really buy that. Then these guys just start firing bullets. Like, it's no proper police tactical unit. I mean, not spread out or anything. Like, it's like you could see Arrow kind of leading them away from Laurel, and the SWAT guys just are firing at them. Laurel grabs the folder, doesn't even think to look at it until they get outside. I mean, that...
Yeah.
I don't usually say this. There's just, that was some stupid stuff going on right there.
It was a little... how would you describe it? It was a little...
Far-fetched?
Far-fetched, but it was a little stereotypical of an action story. You know, I mean, you might see this on a less developed... Mm-hmm. TV series where they have lots of action, you know, just it was convenient.
Right.
And we're not used to really seeing things that were quite so convenient.
That is true. Convenient is a good term, I think, for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well,
and then we already kind of talked about some of the Laurel stuff that,
yeah,
that
Laurel,
we saw in there as well.
You know, speaking of Laurel, you know, when she, was meeting him on the roof, the first thing she says is, "You're late." That rubbed me the wrong way. Like, excuse me.
Well, I loved his comeback. It's like, well, because I was checking to make sure there wasn't a SWAT team here ready to take me down.
Yeah,
it's like, of course.
Yeah.
Remember, yeah, Arrow doesn't trust you because, you know, you turned on him at the beginning of the season, so.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm not really liking where it's going. But I will look at this now. Laurel, I think we've seen a little bit of the capabilities of Laurel, what her superpower may eventually be.
Oh, yeah?
She is able... to take pills without drinking water. And
sweet.
That's a pretty good, that's a good skill to have.
That is a
well,
good skill.
It's not a good skill if you're a drug addict, but it's
it's handy.
It can come in handy, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if you're on long trips.
Maybe
or
she
you're in record rooms.
Well, they can call her the salivator. Because maybe she makes a lot of saliva.
Just don't call Gordon Jump the salivator, yeah, just, please. That would be...
No, now you've done. Now you've gotten me to think all about that.
And you know, one other thing, I would kind of like to see Oliver stop taking his frustrations out on his friends, on his team. There.
Well, okay, go ahead. Yeah, finish your statement. I got something to say about that too. So.
Well, I don't know. I just be a little nicer to Felicity and Diggle. They don't really have to be there. And I mean, I guess he's probably paying them, but. But, you know, they're doing it because they want to, and they're the good guys, and they respect what he's doing. But, gosh,
right.
Come on. I want more of that witty banter interaction between the three of them. And you know, frankly, in the history of Green Arrow in the comics, the character, there's been ups and downs, of course, about how Green Arrow is. There's been some really, really dark storylines and mm-hmm. series of Green Arrow, but there's also been some where Green Arrow is he's a very confident man, you know, no superpowers, just a really good archer, but he's not dark, he's not Batman,
he's,
you know?
Jokey.
So, he's jokey, yeah. He kind of has some little one-liners and some comebacks, and I like the idea of him being, you know, serious when he needs to be, but mm-hmm. But if, you know, if he's coming into the Arrow Cave after a long, hard day of asking people what color their shoes are, then, you know, let's have a little...
Well, I feel he's got to get to that place, right? He's got to go through this dark place that he's still trying to get out of.
I guess, but I kind of feel like he already has.
I mean,
he has been,
you know,
that.
To some degree. What I was going to say about him coming down hard on the team... you know, in any kind of drama, the people that take the brunt of your frustrations are those closest to you. You know,
oh,
it's
yeah.
usually the family. But in this case, this is Oliver's family in terms of, Arrow's family, Diggle and Felicity at least. So, but pretty soon it sounds like he's going to have Roy to put some frustrations out on. And I don't think Roy's going to stand for that kind of crap.
Yeah, probably not. Well, and see, remember, Diggle didn't used to either. Diggle used to kind of lay it on the line.
Diggle wanted, you know, early on, first season, you know, Diggle really wanted to, he stood up enough for himself to know that, you know, I'm not your whipping boy, I'm not your slave, I'm not your,
not your chauffeur. Oh, wait, yes, I am.
Right, except for when I am. You know, and then he got to the point where it's like, you respect me? All right, cool, where do you want to go? But, you know,
yeah,
it's, yeah, we're kind of a little bit back to that, but I do like some of the patter that, you know, like Diggle had a great line this week where Oliver said, you know, Roy is not really one to, you know, talk about his feelings. And Diggle says, oh, yeah, just like you and me, Oliver.
You know, it's,
yeah. He always has a good line, so I just I want to see him kind of more of that interaction. So
yeah.
One more thing about Oliver. Did you feel like Island Oliver, you know, going back to the flashbacks here, he was just a little too boyish when he was talking to Sarah this time. You know,
there
you know
was
how
something
had,
different about it.
Well, you know, remember at first season, first part of the first season, how he was just that, you know, spoiled bratty rich kid on the island and first learned how dark it was. He kind of had a little bit of that when he was talking to Sarah. They went back to the fuselage there, which I kind of had thought had blown up, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they missed that.
That's true.
And he, I don't know, he just kind of had that, no, Sarah, we can't do that because we got to go find Slade. And I don't know, it was a little too much of that. I need to see Island Oliver starting to get dark. He's been there for a year.
Yeah.
He needs to start getting his confident Oliver voice on.
Well, so. That could be also,
what a horrible
though,
imitation of confident Oliver voice.
Yeah, right.
Sorry about that.
But that could just also be because, I mean, he's around Sarah again, and he's, you know, he's reverting back to where he was. You know, I would think maybe that was what Stephen Amell was trying to do, was when Oliver has been around Sarah, that's how he's acted. Now that they're, you know, they've got kind of a breather, that's the kind of person he reverts to, because it's comfortable. It's his old life. And it's not who he wants to be necessarily, but it was who he was comfortable being.
Okay. I buy that. But no more. We're done.
Okay.
He doesn't need to be like, cool. he doesn't need to be like that anymore. He can end that now.
Well, there were just a few references on this episode that I wanted to bring to everyone's attention. There was one reference to Judge Carlin, who is most likely a reference to Mike Carlin, a former DC editor who ran Superman as well as many other comics, and was also a writer for DC for a while. You mentioned the scene on the roof where Arrow meets up with Laurel and a train goes by in the background behind them, and the name on the train was the Arrow Line, which I thought was pretty cool. Now, this is really interesting. I hadn't even thought about this one, but D.A. Spencer, the district attorney,
who we haven't seen yet, right?
Just right, we haven't name. Seen D.A. Spencer, but we know it's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And you said maybe, I don't think we've gotten her first name either, but you said maybe it's a reference to Kate Spencer, who is one of the characters that, or one of the people that have been the character Manhunter.
Yeah.
In the DC universe, probably, I think she was invented around 2005, 2006, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And in the comics, Kate Spencer's a federal prosecutor. So I just thought it kind of fit. And I don't know if that's who it is or not. I don't
yeah,
even, we don't
I'm
even
not
know
terribly.
I was just going to say, we don't even know if D.A. Spencer's a man or a woman, do we?
Oh, I think we know she's a woman. I think.
Oh, do we know that? Okay.
Laurel's boss, and I'm blanking on his name right now, but he had said something about, I think he referred to the D.A. Spencer as her at one point.
Oh, okay. I must have missed that. I even went back and listened again. I missed it. So,
yeah.
But it could be a long shot, but the names fit, and you know how much they do that. You know, Mark Guggenheim even said they use a lot of different ways, a lot of different things in the universe in a lot of different ways. So it could
right.
be.
Hey, Mark, are we right? See if he's see if he's listening.
We win a prize, like a little, I don't know,
like a no
sticker,
prize
a sticker or something. I'll take
yeah.
it.
And then Deathstroke's costume here really resembled the new 52 version of Deathstroke. I only really know this because I continually fight this character in the Injustice video game on my iPad.
Oh, dear.
But there is a, you know, the costume is very similar. There are two versions of Deathstroke you can play, one without the mask and one with the mask. And the mask is this new style kind of hockey looking mask like he was wearing in the show. But very excited to see that outfit. I mean, I thought it's like when we saw Deathstroke, quote unquote, in the first season, I'm like, okay, that's cool. That looks like Deathstroke. That looks like the Teen Titans Deathstroke. But Slade Wilson in the getup, man, that was, as Stephen Amell said in his Facebook post, badass. That is badass. Very excited.
It looked good. People were very stoked about that new look.
Oh. Very much so. And just here at the end of the show, if you guys don't want to know titles for upcoming episodes, you can just either end the episode now or skip ahead by about a minute. Just wanted to run down the next the names of the next three episodes. So we just saw episode 11. Episodes 12, 13, and 14, we know the names for. 15 and 16 are the two that Mark referred to in his interview with us earlier, which we don't know the episode titles for, which will be spoilers when they come out. So we know that episode 12 is going to be called Tremors. Episode 13 is called Heir to the Demon. And episode 14 is called Time of Death. And then as we have here in our notes, episodes 15 and 16 are Mind Blown. So I'm looking forward to that. And then after that, there are still seven more episodes. Can you believe that? I mean, this is great. We're basically halfway through the season here. We've got basically half another episode, and then we're halfway through the season.
That's hard to believe.
I know. Very excited. I'm sure there's going to be another break here, probably after episode 16, I'm guessing. Hopefully they'll be able to run through these next five and then take a break. But I guess we'll have to see.
All right.
So that's about it for this week's episode of Green Justice.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. And please, you know, make sure you leave us feedback on iTunes if you did. That helps us tremendously, and we love hearing from you. If you also want to contact us by email, you can send an email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com or on Twitter at Green Justice Pod, and make sure you share that Twitter with everybody, along with our Facebook page, facebook.com/Green Justice Podcast, and like us and share us on Facebook so we can keep spreading the word.
And you can also check out the other show that Josh and I do called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which is also available here at Random Chatter. I'd also like to thank Mark Guggenheim one more time for joining us on the show this week, and hope we can talk to him again before too long. And let's love to hear the feedback that you guys have about the interview, about the show, whatever you'd like to say. If there's someone that you'd like to hear us interview on the show, please let us know. Reach out via email or Twitter or Facebook, or post it on iTunes or wherever you can, and let us know what you think. And of course, if you enjoy the podcast, please be sure to tell all your friends and share this on all your sites. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.